Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Today, we continue our series on cancer, chronic disease, and prevention by discussing the obesity crisis in the U.S. New research published in The Lancet finds that obesity-related deaths are on the rise, and the obesity epidemic continues to skyrocket with no end in sight. Over the past three decades, obesity rates in adults and adolescents aged 15 to 24 have more than doubled. Obesity-related health risks include type 2 diabetes, heart disease, stroke, some cancers, and mental health issues. So how can we talk about the obesity crisis and the very real health effects of obesity without shaming? Today, we're joined by Dr. Hannah Kaliova, Director of Clinical Research at the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, a nonprofit that works to change the way doctors treat chronic disease like diabetes, heart disease, and cancer. They put prevention over pills and empower patients to take control of their own health. Dr. Kaliova directs research studies analyzing the effect food choices have on insulin resistance and the regulation of a healthy body weight. She's published more than a dozen nutrition studies. Her new research is a secondary analysis of a study that randomly assigned participants who were overweight to an intervention or control group for 16 weeks, and we'll learn more about that. Dr. Hannah Kaliova is the author of Vegetarian Diet in the Treatment of Diabetes. She also wrote the chapter about using a plant-based diet to treat diabetes in vegetarian and plant-based diets in health and disease prevention. Hi, Dr. Kaliova. Thank you so much for your work, and thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I want to start off by talking about shame. I think this is so important. And for listeners who have been tuning in for the past few months, have noticed that we're doing a lot of shows about health because I lost my dad to a very rare and aggressive form of cancer in early January. And Dr. Kaliova, my dad struggled with weight for decades. It dominated so many of our conversations. And so obviously we don't want to shame people at all. This is a really difficult subject, but I have seen up close how this affects loved ones. I mean, in addition to my dad, there are other people in my family who are dealing with this. So what are your thoughts on how we can talk or how we should talk about the obesity crisis and the health effects of obesity without shaming?
This is such an important question because all of us want to be treated with respect. And yet we also want to be able to access accurate information. And I believe this is where research comes in. And that's why I do the work I do. I direct research studies that bring more light on these topics because there's nothing worse than being overweight, trying your best, you know, following a diet plan only to find out that it's not long-term sustainable, for example, or to find out that you're following a keto diet, which causes your body to lose muscle. Once you get off the diet, you regain more weight than you lost. But it's not the muscle that you regain, it's the fat. So doing research studies that actually measure how people lose weight and what they lose, what their body composition is, that's where our work comes in. And our research studies focus on vegan diets, vegetarian diets, and we compare them with either a standard American diet or some active diet, such as a portion control diet or a Mediterranean diet. And what we find in the research studies is that the vegan diets are really super effective in weight loss. And some people find it relieving. For some people, it's the first diet that actually works. after trying so many diets in their lifetime, all of a sudden they can. It's an ad libitum diet, which means that they can eat as much as they want. There is no fighting hunger. And so many people find it relieving that there's something that actually works for their body. They can eat as much as they'd like, and they can be satisfied, and they can still lose weight without, trying hard. Bringing accurate information is, I would say, number one for people who struggle with extra weight. And then the second piece is sometimes people believe that they need a super strong will, because otherwise they will not be able to follow the diet. And I would say that instead of strong will, if you have a system in place, and then you don't need such a strong will. And let me explain what I mean by that. In our studies, we find that when people do something in a group setting, when they support each other, it makes it much easier. When you're alone, in your whole family and in your whole environment, it's much more challenging. If you're a part of a group, it's easier because you can support each other. Another part of the system that I'm mentioning is just, getting rid of all the contraband in your house. If the only dessert you have in the house is an apple, this is what you're gonna have. If you avoid all the tempting aisles in the grocery store, it's much easier than bringing some contraband home and then trying to exercise your willpower. So the right information and a system in place really sets up people for success. And I believe that everybody can win this battle.
Going back to shame for just a minute, because this is so important, I ran across a piece in the Association of American Medical Colleges this morning by Dr. Fatima Cody Stanford, who is an obesity medicine physician at Massachusetts General and also a professor at Harvard Medical School. And she writes about a patient she had, Jaslyn, a 45-year-old woman with severe obesity. And she treated her for about 3 years, carefully outlining healthy eating plans and physical activity regimens. And she never lost more than 5 pounds. And Dr. Stanford wrote, "Part of me believed she just wasn't trying hard enough." One day, she ran into her patient at a grocery store, and she found herself looking at her grocery cart, surveying her choices. And her patient said, "See, Dr. Stanford, I've been doing exactly what you suggested. I've got whole grains, fruits, vegetables." And she thought, "So what was going wrong here?" And Dr. Stanford wrote, she failed to realize that treating obesity is hardly a matter of just getting patients to eat less and move more. It's a complex disease. It can be fueled by a number of factors, including one's genes, environment, and hormones that affect the desire to eat and the amount of fat stored." So can you also talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. This is a fascinating topic because the interaction between the genes and the environment, affect all of us. And it turns out that each one of us has a genetic component to, our body shape, but there's also a lot we have in our hands when it comes to our body weight. Studies with identical twins reveal that more than 50% of our body weight is affected by our food choices. So it's not only about the calories that we consume, but also about the food composition. Because the food we eat will also be absorbed to a different extent. Like, for example, if you eat whole grains, you will chew them, but still you will not be able to get every single nutrient out of them. Some of the calories will be simply flushed down the toilet. Compared with, let's say, like a white bread, where the calories are just, readily available for your body. It's not only how many calories you eat, but also the form in which you consume the calories. It turns out that the whole grains and the legumes and the vegetables and the fruits, those are the best fuel for your body, because they also help you burn more calories. We did a study with 244 people who are overweight, and they were randomly assigned to either stay on their usual diet or to follow a low-fat vegan diet that consisted of fruits and vegetables and whole grains and legumes for 16 weeks. And we measured their body composition and their metabolism. We invited them to our lab, and we did a test that's called the indirect calorimetry. We measured the calories they were burning. This machine looks like a spaceship, and the participants just came to the lab, and we placed a clear hood over their head. And they were breathing normally for 15 minutes, and we were measuring how many calories they were burning, not only in the fasting state, but also after a standard breakfast. And what we found after the 16 weeks was really fascinating. The vegan diet actually increased the thermic effect of food, the amount of calories the body is burning after we eat a meal, by 14%. By 14%, the thermic effect of food was higher on a vegan diet, which means that after each meal you eat, if you make the right choices in terms of food selection, you can actually help your body burn more calories. Not only, you don't need to be focused on how many calories you're actually eating, but you can actually help your body burn more calories.
Can you talk about how you got involved in this work? It's so important now because we'll also talk about the new Lancet study that came out. More than half of adults and a third of children and adolescents are predicted to be overweight or obese by the year 2050. But before we talk about that data, how did you get so involved in this kind of work?
When I was going through medical school, I was just watching how people with diabetes were treated and what the dietary recommendations for them were. And I noticed that the main focus was just on counting calories and counting carbohydrates. And what happens when people count their carbohydrates, when they cut down on rice and bread and potatoes? What happens? Well, they end up with eating more meat and cheese, which make their diabetes even worse and make their diabetic complications come sooner. So when I looked at, the practice in the hospital, I just decided that this needed to change. And I decided at the end of medical school to perform my first study using a plant-based diet for people with diabetes. And so right after medical school, I started this first study of mine where half of the people with type 2 diabetes were assigned to follow a carbohydrate restricted diet or and a portion control diet, and the other half was following a plant-based diet for 6 months. And we found that the plant-based diet was twice as effective in terms of body weight. People lost more weight on the plant-based diet, and also in improving insulin sensitivity and in improving the oxidative stress The oxidative stress is the underlying mechanism behind diabetes, behind also cardiovascular disease and cancer. So it's common for all the chronic diseases. If we can tackle oxidative stress, if we can train our body to be able to cope with oxidative stress better, then we're actually addressing the underlying cause of all the chronic diseases. And that's exactly what we found. These people with diabetes, their oxidative stress was just through the roof at the beginning of the study. But on the plant-based diet, it was significantly improved compared with the portion control diet, which means that it set them up for success, not only for treating diabetes, but also for treating other chronic conditions. Because it's not diabetes, that kills more people, it's the heart disease, that's the killer number one for people with diabetes. So if we can just solve or we if we can help our body to cope with oxidative stress more effectively, we're not only addressing diabetes, but we're also addressing the underlying heart disease and the risk of cancer down the road.
I'm glad you brought this up because heart disease remains the leading cause of death in the United States, claiming the lives of 1 million people in the U.S. every year, according to the American Heart Association. We've been doing a lot of shows about cancer, and while more people are living with cancer, more people, especially young people, are receiving a cancer diagnosis. And just based on what I went through with my dad, I just don't think we talk enough about what it means to even have cancer, just how it completely changes your life, going to the treatments, the side effects of the treatments, and how you have to, for the most part, really stop your life to deal with all of these treatments. So these conversations are so important because we're just going in the wrong direction. And yet, so many of the do every doctor on our show has said it doesn't have to be this way. So today we are continuing our health series by talking about the obesity crisis in the United States, which is also on the rise here in the US and really around the globe. How can we talk about this crisis and the health effects of obesity without shaming? If you have any comments or questions for our guest today, Dr. Hanna Kaliova is Director of Clinical Research at the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. It's a nonprofit that works to change the way doctors treat chronic diseases such as diabetes, heart disease, obesity, and cancer. They work to put prevention over pills and empower patients to take control of their own health. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. One listener says, does a vegan diet reverse diabetes or just halt it? And can you talk about the differences between a healthy vegan diet and an unhealthy vegan diet?
Wow, these are such great questions. In our studies with people with diabetes, we find that most people experience a significant improvement in their diabetes, and sometimes their diabetes is completely reversed. That doesn't happen for everybody, because everybody has a different baseline. Let's say if you've had your diabetes for 20 years and you're on insulin and now your beta cells that produce insulin are not working that well, you may still, need some medications to treat your diabetes even on a vegan diet. But for many people, they find that they can completely reverse their diabetes. And it's important also to mention that there are more kinds of diabetes or, different types of diabetes. Type 2 diabetes is the most frequent one that affects over 90% of people. And usually it manifests when people are in their 50s or 60s. Usually it takes more than a decade to develop type 2 diabetes. People are just gradually putting on weight, And eventually, when they go to see their doctor and do a blood test, their blood sugar is high. So that's usually how people find out. But there's also type 1 diabetes, which is an autoimmune condition which may manifest even in childhood. In this particular case, the beta cells that are in the pancreas and that produce insulin are not able to keep up with the demands of the body. The body actually destroys them because the immune system perceives them as a threat. And so it starts killing the beta cells in the pancreas, and now the body is not able to produce enough insulin. So these people with type 1 diabetes, which is an autoimmune condition, they need to take insulin for the rest of their life. But we did a study with a vegan diet in people with type 1 diabetes, and we found that a vegan diet can significantly improve even type 1 diabetes. It can reduce the dose of insulin by 28% on average. The average reduction of insulin dose per day was 12 units a day. So that was a 28% reduction. And the vegan diet also improved other cardiometabolic outcomes. So people who were overweight, they lost weight. Their insulin sensitivity improved. Their cholesterol and other cardiometabolic markers were improved. Even the kidney function was improved, which is really encouraging because kidney disease is one of the complications of diabetes that you don't want to develop. So if you can actually improve kidney function using a vegan diet, that's a significant benefit. It was improving. The vegan diet can improve type 2 diabetes, leading sometimes to even a complete reversal of the disease. And it can also significantly improve type 1 diabetes, which is an autoimmune condition.
And what about the differences between a healthy vegan diet and an unhealthy vegan diet?
And this is such an excellent question. When we conduct our research studies, we ask the study participants to follow a vegan diet, which means a diet that doesn't contain any animal products and consists of grains and legumes and fruits and vegetables. And we also ask them to keep the fat content low. We ask them to keep the fat content under 30 grams of fat per day. And when they go and buy some products in the grocery store, they need to check the label. And if the products have more than 3 grams of fat per serving, then the product is out. So all the products that they buy need to be vegan, completely plant-based, and they also need to be low in fat. These two simple rules ensure that people stay away from the junk, that would not improve their diabetes much. Some people believe that sugar is the main devil when it comes to diabetes. But studies actually show that if we were to point out one single food as the most riskiest food for diabetes, it's meat. And after meat, it's other foods that contain a lot of fat. So when we want to significantly improve diabetes, we want to set aside all the animal products and keep the diet vegan, but we also want to keep the fat content low.
Before we go to break, just going back to the obesity crisis in general, can you talk about the benefits of just adding more fruits and vegetables to your diet? I ran into a neighbor who's been listening to these shows, and I asked her, "What do you think about this? I don't want this to come across as judging or shaming." because, I mean, the fact of the matter is my father would never go vegetarian. I just wanted him to eat more fruits and vegetables. And she said, that is the exact message that's coming across. And she said, I just had a conversation with my dad about the need to eat more fruits and veggies because he just doesn't. So can you also talk about this, Dr. Kaliova?
Yeah, that's an excellent question as well.
Because a lot of people want to make small changes, and just adding more blueberries on a regular basis or adding more vegetables to your plate can have such an incredible positive impact, and it happens so quickly. So can you talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. In one study using the DASH diet, which is a diet that emphasizes fruits and vegetables and grains and legumes, but it still includes some animal products, the study showed that people were able to reduce their blood pressure significantly by just adding more fruits and veggies. Fruits and vegetable consumption is also responsible for some of the benefits on a Mediterranean diet. But when people are actually wondering which diet is the most effective, then it's helpful to look at head-to-head studies that just compare, two diets against each other. And we did such a study comparing a vegan and a Mediterranean diet. And even though the Mediterranean diet is a significant improvement in terms of diet quality compared with a standard American diet, the vegan diet worked much better for weight loss and other cardiometabolic outcomes. But that being said, as you mentioned, when people move like in that direction and start eating more fruits and vegetables, they will experience some benefits. But it's also important to have the whole picture and to understand that the more fruits and vegetables and grains and legumes I eat, if I'm able to set aside those animal products, at least, for a certain period of time and test it out fully, the benefits are, just remarkable and outweigh any other diet.
We're going to take a quick break. Today, we continue our series on health, cancer, chronic disease, and prevention by talking about the obesity crisis in the U.S. and also around the globe. How can we talk about this crisis and the health effects of obesity without shaming? Today, we're joined by Dr. Hannah Kaliova, Director of Clinical Research at the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. It's a nonprofit that works to change the way doctors treat chronic disease and put prevention over pills by empowering patients to take control of their own health. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today, we continue our series on health by talking about the obesity crisis in the United States. If you missed our show yesterday, we talked about the overconsumption of ultra-processed foods, which is at an all-time high. And then tomorrow, we'll continue our series by speaking with three people who overcame their food addictions. As we've been talking about, over the last 50 years, the food environment has drastically changed, leading to an increase in the loss of control eating, obesity, and diet-related disease. So we hope you can join us tomorrow. If you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can email yourcall@kalw.org. And if you'd like to join our show today, if you have any questions or comments about obesity, we'd love to hear from you. If you're struggling or if you have loved ones who are struggling and you'd like to share your story, again, no judgment, no shaming. It's just this is such a crisis and so many people are suffering, and it's so important to talk about these issues. As we've been talking about on our show, many of our callers have said it's really hard to be active in your community if you're dealing with health crises. If you're caregiving, it's hard to be active in your community. So these issues are so important to talk about, especially in this political climate. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Let's hear from Kelly in Corte Madera. Hi, Kelly. Thanks for holding.
Good morning. Thank you. I'd like to preface this by saying I've been a vegetarian for, for over 50 years with occasional dabbles in veganism, but a solid vegetarian for well over 50 years. I'm also fat. I've always been fat. I always will be fat. So my concern with the doctor's promotion of a vegetarian and vegan diet for weight loss plays into all of the stereotypes of any other diet. The use of the word contraband, implying that there are bad foods and good foods, limiting, restricting, those all play into traditional diets, which we all know have below a 5% success rate for weight loss, according to myriad studies. So my thought is, in promoting a vegan and vegetarian diet, which I think is fabulous, I promote them, I mean, I support them 1,000%, and any other diet per se, I think an emphasis on the health benefits rather than restriction, weight loss, which is not guaranteed on any diet long term. So the focus on health benefits, expanding one's palate, adding a few more vegetables every day, is a much more realistic and applicable benefit than weight loss, which is not guaranteed or assured long term for any diet, even vegan or vegetarian diet. Short term, absolutely. Everybody loses weight short-term on diets. That's a given. But long-term sustainability, practicality, applicability is just doesn't work in this world the way things are right now.
And Kelly, thank you so much for calling. How do you think we should talk about the obesity crisis and the health effects of obesity without shaming?
I think the big thing for me is the word obesity. I prefer to use the word large bodies in a fat body, in a larger body, in a smaller body. Obesity sort of is such a blanket statement that really has no science behind it. They've taken size and they've given it this medical name, which tends to give it more cachet in my perspective. My concept, or how I'm a fitness trainer, I work with clients, is about how can we keep you healthy? How can we get you strong? How can you keep your life at a good quality by moving every day, adding better things to the, or more vegetables and fruits and vegetables, as opposed to losing weight? Because most people, again, do not lose weight long-term on any diet. So it's about moving and taking care of yourself and the health benefits and doing everything that you can, with weight being the last thing on the table.
Well, I so appreciate your perspective. And again, I really want to emphasize that we're doing these shows because so many people are suffering. I'm doing this from a personal perspective. My dad struggled with weight and really had a hard time moving toward the end of his life. It just was, it was awful to experience. And so we all have different stories, and I appreciate what you say about the word obesity and the fact that some people might be triggered by the word contraband or limiting or restricting, and are there other ways we can talk about this? So thank you so much. Dr. Kaliova, what are your thoughts on what Kelly just laid out there?
Thank you so much for the wonderful comment, Kelly. You know, when we're looking at vegetarians and vegans compared with general population, the Adventist Health Study 2 showed that there is a linear relationship between the animal product consumption and body weight. So the more animal products people eat, the more meat, the more cheese, more eggs, and more dairy they eat, the heavier they tend to be. And vegetarians who avoid meat but still eat dairy and eggs, they're leaner on average compared with the non-vegetarian population. And the leanest group of all of these people are vegans. In fact, vegans were the only group in the Adventist Health Study 2 whose average body weight was within the normal body weight, within the normal body mass index range. The food choices that we make make a significant impact on our body. You know, the study also showed that in each group, there were people who had some extra weight. But the odds were much higher in the non-vegetarian population that people would be overweight, compared with vegetarians, and vegans had the lowest risk. of being overweight. And this was also mirrored by the risk of developing diabetes. Vegans had the lowest risk of developing diabetes, and it was slightly higher in vegetarians, and it was almost 3 times higher in the non-vegetarian population compared with vegans. You know, when we've had quite a few vegetarians join our study, and they were quite impressed by how quickly their body composition and their weight came off on the low-fat vegan diet. So I'm not saying that everybody has to do it, but it's my job to, you know, inform people that this is a really effective approach. And many people who've tried, you know, different types of diet find this approach really liberating, because you eat as much as you'd like and you still keep losing weight in a healthy way. Most of the weight loss is because you're losing fat. If somebody, you know, with this information decides that, you know, I'd like to just start small and I'd like to add more fruits and veggies, that's completely up to them. But my job is just to inform about the efficiency of the different dietary approaches. And so that's what we're doing here. We're just providing information, and everybody, you know, will decide what's best for them.
Well, thank you again for the call, Kelly. We have two related emails. One listener writes, can you talk more about why proper grocery selections might not work for some people? Another listener writes, I've been plant-based for many years and gained a lot of weight during perimenopause, which I have not been able to lose. Nothing is working. I eat a low-fat, plant-based diet. There's no way I can eat as much as I like. Hormones are clearly an issue. Can you talk about this?
Wow, perimenopause, that's such a challenging period of time, right? And in one of our studies, we took women who just went through menopause and were also experiencing hot flashes. Now, hot flashes are not only annoying and that, you know, they can wake you up, but they're also a sign that your body is at an increased risk of developing diabetes and cardiovascular risk down the road.
Really?
So, yeah, absolutely. Wow. We were asking a simple question. Can diet make a difference for these women right after menopause? To answer that question, we had 84 women in the study. Half of them stayed on their usual diet, and half of them adopted a low-fat vegan diet, which also included half a cup of cooked soybeans every day for 12 weeks. So it was a relatively short study. And within 12 weeks on the low-fat vegan diet that also included half a cup of cooked soybeans, there was a significant reduction in hot flashes by 88%, which is just incredible. You know, this is something, you know, that's unheard of, that a dietary intervention would be so efficient in reducing hot flashes. And women who had some extra weight also lost weight. We find in our studies that people lose about 1 pound a week on average on the low-fat vegan diet. And sometimes we also hit some snags with our study participants. You know, not everybody loses the same amount of weight. Some people hit some weight loss plateaus, and we need to be patient. We need to help them, you know, optimize the dietary choices during those challenging periods of time. So when the weight loss is not happening, you know, at some point, we find it really helpful to increase the consumption of raw vegetables and start each meal with a salad, with leafy greens in particular. Another strategy that's really helpful for weight loss is time-restricted eating or intermittent fasting, particularly eating breakfast and lunch and skipping dinner. We did a study in people with type 2 diabetes comparing this approach, eating only two meals a day, breakfast and lunch, with eating six small meals during the day. And the calories were the same, the diet was the same, but people were losing more weight on the two meals a day, on breakfast and lunch, compared with the six small meals during the day. It also improved diabetes more. People lost more liver fat. Their metabolism was improved more on two meals a day. Emphasizing the leafy greens, but also the timing of the meals, shifting the meal intake earlier in the day and not eating in the evening. Or if you're hungry, then keeping your supper super light. That would be another strategy. So when it comes to nutrition, you know, we have more tools in the toolbox. And if somebody needs to lose weight and they're not losing weight, we also, you know, need to be patient, and we need to find the approach that will work for them in that particular situation.
We have a few emails about weight loss drugs, the GLP-1 meds. One listener writes, "A vegan diet would never have been sustainable for me and most others like me. Mounjaro has changed and likely saved my life in under a year, like countless others. Here is how to remove shame from the way we address obesity. Accept that obesity is a disease, and there are now near miraculous pharmaceutical treatments for it." What are your thoughts on obesity drugs? Weight loss drugs, I'm sorry.
It's another tool that people can use, if it's working for somebody, that's wonderful. Studies show that once people get off of these medications, then they regain the weight pretty quickly. So as long as somebody is on that medication, it may be, you may think about it as a solution to the problem, but you're not actually addressing the underlying cause. If it's working for somebody, great. But if somebody is actually looking for how can I increase my GLP-1, which is a hormone secreted after meal intake naturally, we did a study comparing two sandwiches. People came to our lab in the morning, and in a random order, and they received either a vegan sandwich or a meat-containing sandwich. Both had the same calories. And after the meat-containing sandwich, the GLP-1 secretion was pretty much flat. It didn't increase at all. But after the vegan sandwich, the GLP-1 secretion increased, and the increase was comparable to sitagliptin, one of the medications that was specifically developed to treat this condition. Another strategy that can help increase GLP-1 naturally through nutrition is eating breakfast every single day. Mm. In one study, they gave people with type 2 diabetes breakfast every day, and the other half of the people skipped breakfast. And people who ate breakfast every day, their blood sugar was lower by 20% throughout the whole day. They also were able to produce more GLP-1, and the difference was 30%. So eating plant foods and also eating your breakfast, those are two strategies that can help boost the GLP-1 secretion naturally.
Today we're speaking with Dr. Hannah Kaliova, Director of Clinical Research at the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. A few people have called in to ask how you spell your name. It's H-A-N-A-K-A-H-L-E-O-V-A. And you can find more information about Dr. Kaliova and find all of our past shows at kalw.org. Click on News and then Your Call. You can also download the KALW app and you can find all of our shows there. You can listen to them at any time. Send a link to friends and colleagues. It's really easy to find and listen to our past shows. Let's go to a few more callers. Ian in San Ramon. Hi, Ian. Thank you for holding.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm 73 years old. I've been morbidly obese since junior high school, and I've tried so many programs. I'm now on Ozempic, and I'm realizing that my addiction to food is far more than just a choice. The Ozempic is keeping me from being hungry as much as I have been, and I find myself sitting in front of the refrigerator, wishing I wanted to eat. Wow. Having nothing to do with the choice, having nothing. I mean, I appreciate my vegan friends, my plant-based friends, my vegetarian friends. I was vegan, formal vegan, for 7 years. I gained weight. Hmm. I got up to 350 pounds in high school. I've hovered around there my entire adult life. I'm sitting here parked in front of the gym waiting for my trainer, who I see three times a week. I work out. My heart's in good shape at 350 pounds at 73. I sleep well, and I've been struggling with this all my life. I wish it was as simple as your guest says. Oh, I'm just going to make a choice to be vegan. Everything's fine. It's not. There's the emotional component of obesity that's worse than heroin, worse than cocaine. You can quit drugs. You can quit smoking. You can quit drinking. You can't quit eating. Just planting that idea. I've been listening to your show. Very much appreciate it. But you're not talking about the emotional, the addiction, the love of food as an addiction. And that's my struggle. I was on Optifast in the 70s for 6 months, liquid diet only. I lost 180 pounds. Didn't help. Oh. Came back. So it's like losing a lover. Mm. The Ozempic is working. It's like losing a lover. I would rather die than become a vegan again.
Wow. Ian, thank you. And I'm sorry if you missed the first part of our show, because my dad had a similar experience to yours. It sounds almost the same. And that's another reason why I wanted to do these shows. How are you feeling now? I mean, how has Ozempic changed the way you feel overall?
It's like I lost a lover. It's like a divorce. It's that profound. I mean, I actually have, without getting too off topic, I have a wonderful social life. I have plenty of intimate contact with people of my choice. At some point, I would rather be by myself eating than in bed with a lover. And that's unfortunate, especially at my age, when most of my friends are jealous because I'm not celibate anymore. And most of them are. So it's just a shame that this has been the overwhelming addiction for my entire life.
Hmm. Well, thank you, Ian. You bring up so many important points there around the emotional aspects of this. And we're going to actually be talking with three people tomorrow who overcame their food addictions. And I just want to thank you for sharing your experience, because there are many layers to all of this. You're right. People can't overnight say, I'm going to change this diet and eat only fruits, vegetables, grains, and beans. It's not that easy. And so we'll definitely talk more about this tomorrow. Dr. Kaliova, final thoughts, given what Ian just said. There's just so much wrapped into food choices. There's the emotional aspect of it. There's the addicting aspect of it. Yesterday, we talked about how companies have scientists working to addict people to fast food and ultra-processed foods. There are many layers to eating and food, especially in these times.
Absolutely. I'm glad you brought this up. And because there are studies with, human brain looking at the reward circuits in the brain. And normally when you eat some food, the reward circuits just light up. The brighter the colors, the more active those reward circuits. So ideally, you want to see some red and orange. And so that's what happens for most people. However, people who are addicted to some substance, for example, cocaine, their response to pleasure is blunted. And now we don't see any red and hardly any yellow. There's more green and even blue, suggesting that these people don't experience the pleasure as other people do. And when we look at brain scans of people who struggle with their weight, their brain scan is actually similar to people who are addicted to cocaine or other substances, which suggests that having extra weight is another form of addiction. And studies actually show that people who are overweight, their dopamine receptors in the brain have a lower concentration compared with lean people. So there's definitely changes happening in the brain that drive, the food choices for people who have extra weight. And that's been, the experience of most of our study participants. Most of them have been overcoming, or dealing with their emotions using food.
Right.
And
Dr. Kaliova, I'm sorry to cut you off, but we're out of time. I just wanted to mention that we will definitely continue to talk about the emotional aspects of food. Ian will also bring in your story during tomorrow's show, talking about food addiction. So thank you again for the call. And thank you so much, Dr. Kaliova. Dr. Hannah Kaliova is Director of Clinical Research at the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.